Welcome to the Ausländer. So, new episode of the Ausländer. I'm really, really happy to have Stefan here with us. War colleague for the moment. Well, actually, when this is released, not anymore. But yeah.
It sounds like I'm going to get fired and I don't know about
it. No, it's me that I'm running away from the...
Well, yeah.
So yeah, welcome.
For sure, man. Thanks. Thanks for having me, man.
It's a pleasure, really. Stephanie, it's originally from Hanau, Germany, but he has lived in Thailand, Netherlands, France, Denmark, and you're back to Germany.
Yes, exactly. Not in that chronological order, but yes.
Okay. Which is the correct chronological order?
First was Thailand, then Netherlands, Denmark, France, then back to Denmark, and then back to Germany.
So you were in France between Denmarks.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah, it was just a short time, but a short time in France and then finishing my thesis off in Denmark.
Exactly, okay. Yeah. So can you explain a little bit why you moved to these different countries and what was the motivation behind? Like,
oh man, opportunities, just a bunch of opportunities popped up. So I thought I'm a smart ass, and when I had to choose within my studies, I just chose stuff where I could go abroad. That's my main focus. It has been my main focus. I was always interested in different cultures, whatsoever. I also grew up in let's say two different cultures or between two different cultures, and therefore I chose studies that could enable me going abroad and stuff. And then there's this beautiful concept of research studies that you can do abroad, and especially when you choose a thesis or whatever research question that that kind of brings you to other places, then you certainly can do so. And so first stop was Thailand. I actually wasn't supposed to go to Thailand. That was, how Bob Ross would say, a beautiful mistake.
Why?
Oh, man. You know, so I went to the international office of the university where I used to study for my bachelor's. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I told them, hey, let's do part. You guys have this partner program. I want to go to South Korea. Always wanted to go there. I can't really explain why. I always thought it's going to be interesting because of the whole, I don't know, always was into technology whatsoever. I thought it's quite interesting to see how they use technology, especially in terms of social media, cultural patterns within social media, because that was the subject of my thesis.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to write on the impact of social media across cultures. So okay. I did it.
That's cats.
That was cats.
It's not that we are under attack. It's
no,
okay.
No, not yet.
Seeing how is the world going right now, yeah.
Exactly. So I had this subject with social media across cultures.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to do a comparative study, and I was looking at the Hofstede Index, so these cultural dimensions. And I just wanted to look at countries that are quite opposite from each other.
Okay.
So obviously I took Germany as my baseline because, well, I used to live there and now I am again, but still at that point it was my point of reference, so I could compare the German social media behavior with another country.
Mm-hmm.
So I chose South Korea because the dimensions were quite opposite-ish.
Okay.
And it was part of the partner program. And I was waiting and waiting and waiting. I never received an answer whatsoever. And then I went to the international office like two or three times, like, hey guys, like, should I book my flight or something? Because like I'm supposed to be there like in 2 months. Same story happened again 1 month. And then like there were like 3 weeks left. And like, hey guys, seriously, I don't have a flat. I don't have a flight. What is going on? Can you please contact them? And then they contacted them and then were like, oh, no way. Like the something went south. Something hasn't arrived. So they never knew that I'm supposed to go there.
No,
Yeah, well, I basically planned everything according to this, even shifted the year when I'm going to write my thesis. So I wrote my thesis before going abroad.
Okay.
Which was quite cool because I was theoretically done with my studies, but without the semester abroad and the comparative study in terms of getting the data, the secondary data on the other country, I couldn't finish the thesis completely, right?
Yeah.
So yeah, that was the issue. And then the university in South Korea actually said like, hey, yeah, but this was our mistake. Let's give this guy a chance. I had whatsoever meetings and try to make it happen. Funny
and
thing.
You ended in Thailand, sorry. Really funny.
wait for it. Like, seriously, guys, if I can give one wise recommendation, always when you're waiting for an important answer, check your spam folder. Just do
it. Oh, shit. No, don't tell me that.
Shit. I really freaking messed it up so hard. Like, I was like, oh, fuck yeah, they're going to give me a chance again. I can go abroad. And then I, yeah, ended up in the spam folder. And then I was like, okay, fuck this. I'm just going to go somewhere. And I actually made it happen in 2 weeks to organize a flight to Thailand. And find a university that still had open spots, like the late signee spots. It was the Rangkameng University in Thailand, in Bangkok, actually. It's, I think, the biggest state university in Thailand, as far as I know. Don't take it with a grain of salt, because I haven't read all the Wikipedia articles by heart, but I think it's more than 500,000 students one university. They had like their own bus and taxi service in there. Like,
okay.
For real.
Okay.
That was insane. Nice. Truly insane. Like a little city. Yeah. And I just arrived there with my backpack and no place to stay whatsoever. And the same day I arrived, I actually had to find a flat, which was adventurous.
I can say, fuck it. So you just went to study abroad to finish your thesis with your backpack.
Yeah.
And you didn't even have a flat in Thailand when you arrived to Bangkok.
You're going to recognize a pattern with that me not having a flat and going abroad thing.
Okay.
Also a thing that I can't recommend.
Another time. Okay,
so,
I see.
So yeah, I just ended up there and... man, one of the best, in exclamation marks, mistakes that ever happened. It was beautiful. Freaking love the culture and the food, the way how they handle things. Yeah, it was an amazing time, honestly.
Yeah, cool. Just as a short introduction of the drink that Stefan proposed for today.
Ooh, yeah.
Actually, Japanese gin.
Oh, I forgot I was in Japan too. Not for that long, but I was, yeah.
Okay, so we can add another country to the wild conversation somehow.
True, yeah.
This is a Roku gin. I don't know if I'm pronouncing it properly, actually, but yeah.
This sounded quite...
Really, really flavorish gin. I would say quite good balance, so... Also, one of my recommendations when it comes gins-wise, and I think it's really funny that we were talking about gins and you did this choice. So
yeah, I actually haven't tried it yet. Just lots of friends telling me that this is a good one. So
yeah, actually, I discovered it here in Germany, to be honest. But since then, I've been drinking this one, quite good gin. So
yeah, I'm enjoying it quite a lot, actually.
Yeah,
it's awesome.
Nice one. So... tell us a little bit about experience of moving. I mean, making Germany, Thailand, it's a cultural shock. I suppose it's a different way of doing things at the end. How did you... you just arrived at without having a flat, just backpacking your bag and go for it. I suppose it's also like student times. We are a little bit more brave everywhere, no? And
So of course I tried to do some research in advance. I reckon without doing that, I mean, there is a fine line between being brave and stupid, and I rather prefer to be brave and do my research in advance. I don't know. what helped me back then, let me try to remember, Facebook groups okay. were a big thing, right? So I basically checked out a Facebook group of foreign students that mm-hmm. are at that university. Mm-hmm. We're trying for looking to, I don't know, find some recommendations of places where you could go, like student housing, whatever. And so I arrived, got out of the airport. It was, I think, like 38, 39, something degrees with a humidity level above 90%. I instantly started sweating. I was dying with my freaking, I don't know, 20, 25 mm-hmm. kilo backpack. Probably more, to be honest. It was like pretty much everything in terms of me being ready to live there for over a year.
Coming from Germany,
yeah. yeah. And crazy. And then I just got into a cab. Uh-huh. And told the cab guy, hey, could you drive me into the district where that university is and just leave me out somewhere? And then I tried to make conversation with him. Problem is that my Thai was quite shitty and his English was quite bad too. So it was sort of, I just showed him the address and typed it in and stuff like this. So lots of sign language lessons I've learned. And just got out. And was I was walking down the road and trying to look for signs that looked like there's a flat in here, because I knew from my research that in that area there's supposed mm-hmm. to be lots of student flats and stuff like that. And, you know, the craziest thing happened. There was like this one place. We always later on called this lady Mutti, which in German means mom. Mutti. I think German listeners may know this term. yeah. And this place, she had a tiny like street restaurant, food truck-ish thing, mm-hmm. right? And I was like, of course, I was darn hungry. Like airplane food isn't the nicest. And no, I was like, no, you know what? I'm just going to sit down there, have a little break, eat something, and then I'm just going to continue. And you know what? I recognized one of, like, there was a girl having some food over there as well with a couple of other people talking a language that I couldn't recognize at that point. And I recognized her face from that fucking Facebook group.
Okay.
So I approached her and was like, hey, aren't you this and that one? Aren't you studying over there? And she was like, yeah, crazy, nice. I've seen your comment. I recognize you too, whatsoever. So imagine you're moving to a different freaking mm-hmm. country, sitting in a random restaurant in one of the biggest cities in the world. And in this fucking restaurant, it's exactly. just one freaking person recognizing you. And then I asked her, like, hey, could you recommend something? And then she just showed across the street of this tiny restaurant mm-hmm. that was like, yeah, we basically live over there. It's a nice place. And I just went over there. And of course, I was super exhausted and tired. So my energy level in terms of actually looking for something better or whatever
was really like, standards were really like in the moment.
Yeah. So at the end, I just took it for 3 months first, because mm-hmm. I thought then I can still switch. And I ended up staying there all the time. It was just nice, to be honest.
Okay.
Yeah.
In sense of like flatmates or like people or whatever, or like place-wise, it was
place-wise,
also
okay. It was really nice. It was close to the so-called Rajamagala Stadium. Mm-hmm. And there was everything from concerts to sports stuff.
Yeah, that's cool.
And you just had to... So basically my way to the university was getting out, having this teeny tiny street where there were like some restaurants and coffees and stuff like that, and also a sort of a bar thing mm-hmm. where there were jam sessions. Music store was there as well. Nice. I'm really into music, so that was perfect for me. And that was just on my way to university, you know. And then at that, there was this tiny corner road where there was this food stall with fresh fruits and stuff. Mm-hmm. Always picked up like pineapples in the morning. And then went through the stadium, which was super cool because the architecture was quite impressive. Crazy restaurants and bazaars on the left and right. And then you arrived at university, you know. So that area just hit hard. It was like it did not feel like being a foreigner over there.
Okay.
Because there were just so many students from so many countries, and students in general, because of those 600,000 students being at that university, or 500,000. Mm-hmm. It was just felt like a very lively area where foreigners were quite welcome, to be honest.
Cool. I mean, that's one of the things that I wanted to ask you, actually. I mean, we are focusing a little bit on Thailand, but I suppose not a lot of people who will come here had lived in Thailand. How is it for foreigners? Because, I can put the comparison of Frankfurt, but we know that it's a super international city, and the size of Bangkok, especially, it's crazy.
How shall I say it? As a German, lots of Thais, at least in my perception, I may be completely wrong.
Cats are crazy, yeah, today? Yeah. Nice.
That's fine. No worries. So as a German, or like whenever they obviously see that I'm not a Thai, whenever I say that I grew up in Germany, or that I am German, like due to the fact that lots of German tourists are going there.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I had the feeling sometimes that Germans had a bad reputation.
Okay, okay. You know, so not the opposite, that you were welcome, but okay.
I mean, the thing is, yeah, what means bad reputation? And I personally never encountered this that hard because I don't really look German, right? Like my ethnical roots are in India, so that whole question of where I'm coming from only came up when I was basically in a university context because they wanted to know where I used to study and stuff like that, right? But besides of that, the question of where you're coming from wasn't really relevant, right? But you know that you can see it in like busy touristy areas like the Khao San Road. That's, let's be honest, German tourists can be quite shitty. I had my bad encounters with them, and I wasn't a local per se. I was just someone living there for a while, but I felt really bad for, I don't know, them being dicks who think that they have more money than these guys earn here in Bangkok, and that they can just treat people like shit. And I think that's not cool. And I've seen this quite often. Even students that were from abroad and maybe from higher paid countries, like, I don't know, let's say Scandinavia. Oh, there was actually a guy from Scandinavia. He treated one waitress in a restaurant like shit because he just had enough money to, I don't know, buy the whole restaurant probably, I don't know. And I don't know. Yeah, shitty situations, man. Really sad. And because of those guys, the reputation of, I don't know, foreigners living there may be a little harmed.
Yep.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah.
So we needed to cut the audio and the video recording, mainly because my cats went crazy. And yeah, we took the opportunity to drop another gin, yeah.
I mean, we're talking about grabbing opportunities, right? Mm-hmm. So, gotta do it every day, every time.
So, yeah, the next question that I wanted to ask you, it's for how long did you stay in Thailand?
Yeah, exactly. I think in total, Bangkok was always my base, but after I finished my studies over there, like my research, I basically had lots of time left. Because I could hand in the thesis, but in order to defend the thesis in Germany, I still had like 6 months left or something like that. So I decided to just stay there. And there was this funny thing because of the visa, right? I think a lot of foreigners or experts in Thailand are actually doing this. Every 3 months, you got to leave the border. You have to cross the border, get a visa somewhere else and come back.
Okay.
And that was like the perfect excuse for me to just travel. So, I did lots of things. Like, for example, I bought a bicycle. Not a bicycle, like a motorbike. It was quite shitty, man. Like, I think it was like around 100 euros or something. Okay. Yeah. So you can you can guess how the quality of that thing was, but I mean, I don't even have a driver's license for a motorbike, so I just wanted to get something, and if I crash it, then I hopefully survive, but then I won't be too hurt because of that fucking, like, my wallet won't be hurt too much.
No, that's for sure. But yeah. If you crash with that, the motorbike goes to hell for sure.
Yeah. Wow. Now that I'm actually saying this out loud, I'm realizing I crossed the border that we defined before, right? Like being brave and stupid. I think that was actually quite stupid.
Crossing the border without the driving license for motorbike with a shitty motorbike? You mean,
yes,
like that?
Yes.
Yeah?
Yes. Wow.
Alert Polizei.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly that. Holy shit, I actually did that. Wow. Well, I was young and stupid.
And tender.
Now I'm old and stupid. So it doesn't matter. It happened. Yeah, and I crossed the border from the north of Thailand in Chiang Mai and went up to Myanmar and also went to Laos. Laos was so crazy. You could actually see the influences from, like, the French people have been there, right? So... Man, there was this one crazy moment. Like, I arrived in Luang Prabang, and then, I don't know, a random tuk-tuk driver tried to sell me some opium. And
okay.
Yeah. That was like the very first thing, the very first encounter with a person I had within Luang Prabang. And then I just went to a random hostel, met a friend over there from Australia, actually. Well, we became friends over there. And we're like, yeah, well, what the hell are we supposed to do tonight? And once we went to a...
I know it took to a driver who did.
Let's skip this part and we can assume if it happened or not. However, we went to a bar and it was crazy. There were just young French people in that bar.
Okay.
It was crazy. You know, you went outside.
Tourists or...
No, they lived there.
Okay.
That was... Yeah. I assume, I'm not quite sure. It was really almost bougie, you know, like almost like hippie, fancy, hipster-ish.
Okay.
Like, and outside of that, you have like sort of the whole communism influences, you know, like French means Russia in Asia. And actually it has been Thailand at one point, I think. I'm not quite sure if I'm doing something historically wrong right here, but, you know, like, this culture clashed, that was just insane.
Okay.
Yeah, and like...
Crazy.
Then dude, that same city, that fucking city, it's insane. I can highly recommend it. Go there. There was this fucking bowling place, like, you know, like...
Yeah, bowling.
It felt like being in the 80s, you know, like you got those shitty shoes and stuff. I felt like they were actually from France, like remnants of the Frenchies that have been there, you know, like that whole bowling ball thingy. And basically, just all the young adults went there on the weekend, got shit-faced drunk and played bowling. And there was... Like fucking, I don't know, Stranger Things, 80s music in the background.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, those were some highlights, man.
You can do the same in Spain with reggaeton all the time. It's
I reckon you can, yeah.
Oh, wow. Gosh.
Yeah, nice. But those were crazy, crazy moments. Like, you know, places where you definitely don't expect stuff like that. Because, you know, I don't know, some couple of days before, you're seeing like some crazy temple somewhere in a high forest where the air is getting so thin that you can, like, I actually got breathing problems because the altitude was so high, you know, like, what means breathing problems? I mean, I was fine, but, you know, like,
dizziness and that,
exactly. And you're feeling like a fucking Lara Croft, you know, and then the next day... You're in this city where, I don't know, you just see like, okay, some Frenchies apparently just stayed there and they just made it their own, you know?
And they made the bowling place.
They made it so insane. Oh,
with the same music of the 80s. They opened the bowling place.
So fucking funny, man. I was just standing there and could, yeah. Like, I think if someone would have told me, like, hey, dude, you're actually dreaming, I would have rather believed that I'm dreaming instead of being alive and actually... living that moment.
Were you traveling alone normally with the motorbike or?
I mean, I did have companions from some time to time, but mainly I tried to do my own thing. Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, whoever has traveled in groups, it can be quite exhausting because groups need to take decisions finding a consensus is super hard. And I just got pissed off at one point.
You don't need any political system if you're alone.
Exactly. Then you're just going broke and you do stupid stuff like getting a shitty bike without a driver's license. Yeah.
Well, that happens also in democracy. I've seen it also. So it can happen also without being too, you're alone, you know, like. But
that's fine. Yeah. I mean.
Oh, nice. Mm-hmm. I wanted to ask you the last question maybe before going back to Europe after your experience in Thailand. Language.
Mm-hmm.
What the fuck? What happened there? Do you speak Thai?
Oh man, so I do know the numbers. I think I do know my favorite dishes.
Mm-hmm. Quite useful. Yeah, forever and ever.
Forever and ever. Like recently, it actually saved my butt. I was longing for that one dish. It's called khao soi. Like, please look it up. It's fucking good. It's like egg noodles with a really savory sauce, sort of in a soup style. And that may have been the best thing I've ever ate in my life. Like, seriously, I'm not exaggerating. And but that was pretty much my whole Thai, to be honest, because I was studying in English. My researches were in English. The Thais that I was interacting with were all able to speak English.
Mm.
And if they weren't, you can be surprised how less talky-talky you actually need in order to understand people, right? I mean, most of the times for me was just, for example, I met some Thai musicians during a jam session. And those guys weren't able to speak English. And I wasn't able to speak Thai, but we were just jamming.
Music.
We were just talking music. It's just that universal language that worked really well. And afterwards, we're still hanging. I think I still have that on Facebook or something like this. We can't reach each other's stuff, you know. Yeah, but it's still nice. pretty cool. Yeah.
Well, I kind of feel relief because if you had told me, yes, I speak perfect Thai in 1 year and a half or whatever, you lived there and I'm in Germany for 3 years right now and my German is like, it's what it is. Let's say like, leave it there. I would feel really bad.
It's always about the incentive, right? I mean, for me, I exactly knew that I'm not going to stay there. I exactly knew that I will get my way around somehow.
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, I tried to learn a couple of words because I think it's just rude to not put at least some effort into it, right? But it was clear from the beginning I'm not going to be a Thai grammar teacher one day.
No, definitely. it was more curious because at the end it's a difficult language because it's really, really different from, I mean, not as much as like German and Catalan or Spanish are not even close to the difference between German and Thai, for example. And it's already difficult for me, for example, to learn it in an easy way, German. And it was just out of curiosity.
Actually, I have one reference that I haven't told you about yet, actually. So before I went to Thailand the first time, I was in Thailand already as an English teacher in the north in a English is not my first language, Waisenhaus, where orphanage exactly. Was like a from a friend of mine who studied Southeast Asian studies, something that they had in their university as a hangout. They're looking for English teachers for this one project. It was an organization that were just sending students over there in order to help out those people there. It was quite funny because those children were actually from the bordering villages in the north.
Okay.
So you had Burma, you had Thailand, and you had Laos.
Mm-hmm.
And those tribe villages, they sent their children over there because they can't afford the education.
Okay.
And it's not an orphanage per se, because they still have parents and whatsoever, but it's sort of like their place to get a kickstart in terms of education.
Okay.
Exactly.
So it's like an internate.
Exactly. Okay. And it was somewhere in the middle of the jungle, sort of. I really loved it over there. And I mean, they couldn't speak English. I was supposed to teach them.
Yeah, that's why you need an English teacher.
Yeah. It's just funny when you can't talk Thai.
Yeah, so, of course. So, that's the main main problem afterwards is like, if you are going to teach English to the children who are speaking your same language, cool. Yeah. If you are going to teach English to Thai speakers,
yeah,
good luck.
I mean, luckily they were still quite young, so I could just draw stuff or be like, I don't know.
Sponges. Like, they are like sponges. It's crazy. It's incredible. Yeah.
It's really crazy. So yeah, that whole sign language thing with the children and that experience that I had before actually moving there for a longer time, not just visiting, I think that sort of prepared me, got to be honest with you. Because if you can communicate with a child and teach them something, you can make some basic conversation in a restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, pointing and stuff. Google Translate is my big friend, of course, obviously.
It's friends of everyone, yes.
Yeah. So,
especially since you can point your camera and it translates things automatically, yes.
Yep, exactly that. I mean, I rarely did that, to be honest, because most of the times it was wrong anyways, and especially regarding food, I had to ask several times.
Oh, yeah, it happens all the time. You see strange things like having plastic inside of your foot.
Yeah.
At least that's what Google Translate says. Afterwards, the meal is incredible, but at the first effort, it's just like noodles with a plastic coat and shoes. Yes,
exactly that. Yeah, had those moments time to time, and then also like. I don't eat meat and also no fish and stuff. So what they sometimes consider as spices were meat for me, you know, like for example, dried shrimp.
Yeah, of course.
Dried shrimp is a spice for them. For me, it was fucking dried shrimp.
Yeah.
So I don't know, those kind of talks. So I did have dried shrimp in my papaya salad, and I picked out every teeny tiny fucking shrimp, and maybe I even ate some, you know, but you know, I mean, I was the guest, I was enjoying the culture and the food over there, so I don't want to be that guy who goes back in there and tells them like, hey, sorry, dried shrimp is not a spice in my country, please take it back. Don't want to be that douchebag.
How old were you when you were in...
Oh, man, this is a good question. How old was I? I reckon I was around... It must have been around 2015, 2016. So I'm 30 now. Yeah. So I reckon I was around 24-ish.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. Nice. 23, 34-ish, yeah.
Cool. So, cats are going crazy again.
They found
something new to play with.
That's what they do, right?
Yep. When did you move out of Thailand? It was just because of ending your studies and it was time to come back to do the thesis year presentation or...
Yeah, basically... during the end of these studies over there, I was looking for jobs already in wherever, because I knew that I'm going to be done. And whoa, a kitty just ran against the table. I really hope it hasn't hurt itself.
No, it was my cable, and now I'm not hearing anything actually. So we rather stop again. So. After second cut, because of the cats.
Cat cut.
Yeah,
have a cat cut, have a break.
Actually, it will be quite...
Okay, this is awesome. Have a cat cut, have a break.
We will use this in this podcast, like cat cut.
A cat cut, yeah. Makes sense.
Yeah, we were just talking about why did you leave Thailand at the end. You were saying just that you were searching for some jobs at that point of time.
Exactly. I was just looking for jobs. Also, I just wanted to finish my bachelor's. And so I moved back and it was in February. So it was quite warm over there. And I arrived and there was a temperature difference out of, I think, 30 degrees from one day to another from in my life. And I came back to Germany. Had my thesis defense, then I had my graduation, I think two days apart or something.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't seen my family for more than a year. And then I basically saw them for a week, had this graduation thing, got my job in the Netherlands already fixed.
Okay.
Had the job interview while I was still traveling in Laos. Thailand.
So, yeah, exactly. So you close your job, next job while being in Laos.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. The reception was quite shitty. I actually even got turned down one job because we couldn't really do the interview because the internet was so shitty.
Okay.
So yeah, for the other one, I actually went back to Bangkok in order to have the talk. That went quite well. Got a job in for some software distribution stuff in Almere, which is a neighboring city of Amsterdam.
Okay.
So, and yeah, then I got all those really big life events, you know, like graduating, seeing your parents after such a long time. And then that was so crazy, man. Like these 5-6 days that I've been back in Germany, they really crushed me because I realized how much I missed my friends and family. Because all the time we have something around you, something that is extraordinary and special. And I was just distracted by those facts.
Mm-hmm.
And then coming back and then realizing like, holy shit, you should have taken a little break in between, man. Mm-hmm. And then I was just there for, I think, a week in total. And I remember it was a Sunday. I can't even remember the fucking date. It was the 7th of February. I drove with my dad and a car full of whatever belonged to me to the Netherlands from Germany. Okay. I had 5 or 6 flat visits that day on a Sunday.
Again. Going without flat.
Yeah, of course, man.
Of course.
And that day I had to decide for a flat. My dad actually drove back and the very next day was my birthday. And my first day at the new job.
Okay.
So I arrived there and nobody actually knew that it was my birthday. And I felt like freaking wrecked, still sort of having jet lag and all that stuff.
Oh, man.
I remember that night after my very first day at the job, I fucking cried. I was so emotionally unstable because of all those changes. That I like, honestly, that was just too much. But on the other hand, that was like, we were coming back to the brave and stupid thing. That I think that was a bold but brave move at the end of the day, because they needed me at that time. And if I've turned down that job, man, like that was truly kickstart career wise, you know.
So it was already inside of the area of design, or.
No, actually not design. Was more into the direction of marketing in the B2B sector.
Okay.
But I met awesome people over there. And due to the fact that they didn't have their own design department, you know, what is the second creative department after design? It's marketing. Okay. So it was the first time I was designing AdWords shit and stuff like that. So, yeah, that was fun, man. It was fun. Really young company, cool people, still having contact with them today. So
okay, that's nice. But at the end, it's just like, yeah, I can understand the emotional shock. No, you have been like more than 1 year abroad, not coming back.
Yeah,
because it's not like going to I don't know. In my case, for example, I'm coming from Barcelona and I'm able to go regularly, or I was able before this COVID thingy to go regularly back home. You're going to Thailand. It's not that easy to just say, oh, I'm grabbing a flight and I come back.
I mean, you could, but
you're a student.
Exactly. Money was always a rare good, man.
How was it like after the first emotional breakdown? Did you realize that at the end, Netherlands, it's just close by? It's Netherlands, it's just fucking border from Germany. So going back home was not going to be that difficult.
I realized that after, you know, like when I was still living in Germany, I was always using, because that was away from my parents in my hometown already. Mm. So I was always using like a BlaBlaCar or those car sharing ride thingies. And it was that the point when I realized that there's even BlaBlaCar is going from Frankfurt to Amsterdam, or even the Flixbus, that I realized, okay, theoretically, this just cost me like 15, 20 bucks if I'm finding a good offer. And I mean, of course, it's a 6-7 hour ride, but I mean, you can spend one long weekend at home with your parents. And after having this realization, I wasn't really that in that mode where I was like, yeah, this huge planning and saving up money for visiting your parents, you know, that just wasn't a thing anymore. So yeah, that definitely made me more relaxed, I'd say, yeah.
Sure. Would you say that was one of the hardest moments emotionally wise in being abroad? I mean,
that for sure was one of the hardest, I gotta admit, you know, because man, if you don't know what you've missed and you realize it and it's too late to change something, that's a shitty feeling.
Yeah, I mean, you realize that you are there for 1 week, that you miss that so much, and you know that you're living in 1 week.
Yeah, because you can't really enjoy the moment, you know? I mean, you're trying to, and you're telling yourself, like, come on, it doesn't make any sense, just relax. And, you know, like, that week is so blurry in my mind. I can't remember it properly because I think I just had to, my brain had to digest, and it just took the whole week to digest, and even longer to digest all those impressions and being back. I think there's this term, or if I make it up, then I just make it up, but I assume it's a thing, a reverse culture shock. So I gotta admit, being abroad was not that big of a culture shock because everything was new. I could explore and I was basically free all by myself and all by my own. And coming back, having that reverse culture shock, actually coming back to something that you're supposed to call home, and you're seeing maybe stuff has changed or nothing has changed, with which both can be equally disruptive in your brain, which has been the case. And when I came back, I think that one hit me way harder than the initial culture shock.
Okay.
Yeah, way harder.
Crazy.
Yeah, totally. Crazy. But yeah, after a while, I mean, the Netherlands, it's a freaking great country. I really like it over there. Great people. Luckily, I had cool work colleagues again. And yeah, I mean, they invited me over, I think, after a couple of days, like, hey, dude, what you're doing? And
Does it mean that your first professional experience was already abroad? Like,
yeah,
you never work in Germany?
I did have work in Germany, but that was like student job-ish stuff, you know? There was no serious full-time job. I mean, I worked at a bar full-time-ish for a while, but that wasn't something...
Yeah, but not during your sector, let's
exactly,
say. Like
exactly.
So the first job that you were proactively seeking to find something in your environment somehow was already in Netherlands.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, true. That was abroad, yeah, now that you're saying it. Yeah,
yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah.
That's really, really interesting.
Sure,
I think we haven't said anything. We know each other from work at the end. We are both designers. Again, I know Carlotta is also a designer. We are bringing a lot of designers in the
podcast. There's a pattern, yeah.
Why should be that? Known each other from
work,
from work. And yeah, this is why I'm asking, because at the end it's curious. Not that you directly started like a kind of career path, already starting from a foreigner country, like being a foreigner. Cool.
That you know, now that you're saying it, it was actually being a German within Europe is sort of a unique selling proposition. it's crazy because it's like the a big economy, and if you can speak German, especially for the neighboring countries like the Netherlands, Denmark, and so on, was a huge plus. So
yeah, I mean, where that's what we call a strong passport, not at the end.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
cool. I mean, what about Netherlands? How much time did you spend in Netherlands? What was your experience as German in Netherlands?
Oh man, the Netherlands were really, really chill. Way less adventurous, because first of all, it's so tiny. If you're coming from Thailand, like, and having this big ass city, Bangkok, you know, and then you're in the Netherlands and you can, I don't know, I think it takes like a 3-4 hour train ride to fucking cross the whole country or something like that. So I don't know, Netherlands calmed me down in a way, and not just because of all the good weed, but probably also because of the doesn't matter. I mean, the people were super relaxed, super, super nice guys that I met, and girls as well. And I mean, there was just this whole, again, the music scene was really big in Amsterdam, the whole jam session, and foreign musicians also sharing the stage with local musicians and interchanging stuff. And also lots of traveling musicians that always want to drop by in Amsterdam. Apparently that's a thing. I didn't know that. So there were places, for example, at Light Supply in the Waterhole. That's a really cool place where I had a couple of gigs. And there were always some acts that just dropped by because they are traveling through the country or something like this. So it was really cool just meeting. I mean, in general, I'd say Amsterdam is super, super international. Okay. So, yeah, Amsterdam in particular, I'd say. Yeah. Also had some friends there already that I actually met in Thailand.
Okay.
Yeah, cool. Yeah. So they came back earlier or something like that, and we also met up and stuff. So that was not such of a big transition because, I mean, there's this cheesy saying, home is where your heart is, right? And I mean, due to the fact that I had friends there already, and that
makes things easier when you know, like, someone around where you can ask for
things. Exactly, exactly. Arrived there, and like, even with my dad, first thing I picked up was like a SIM card for having a phone and stuff like that from a friend that I met in Thailand. So,
yeah, that's nice. That's definitely nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I'm quite curious also because at the end, from the perspective of a South European persons, now at the end, we kind of see more or less the northern cultures quite close by, you know, at the end, like you can see the Denmark, Belgium, Netherlands, Germany, quite close in terms of ways of doing, even if it's not 100% true. I mean, I think there is stigmas that are way different between one to the other, but ways of living.
Yeah.
What you would say that it's the craziest difference between Germany and Netherlands?
Oh, bro, you're gonna laugh at me so hard, man. Okay. Sorry, but I have to be really proud of German bread at this point, because god damn it, when I went to the first lunch break, man, the thing that they call bread, I mean, it's you could smush it like a sponge, you know, and it would just like slowly retract itself again, like some fucking alien. Man, come on, dude, that was crazy. That was just insane. At the end, I sort of liked it though.
It's funny, but it's the second episode that it appears German bread also. So I'm seeing some patterns here, and I'm afraid about designers and bread in this country right now. So
designers apparently like German bread, huh? Yes. Oh man. But seriously, German bread, that's one of those things that you get to miss when you're abroad. Or, well, if you like German bread, assuming that, I guess.
It's really difficult to not like German bread, because you have all the types of bread as possible that you can create. Yeah. So,
well,
besides the Netherlands bread.
Netherlands bread, yeah. I mean, you could maybe get that somewhere. I wouldn't like get the like maybe get the cheapest. I don't want to offend Dutch people right now. Probably I am already. Your spreads are super awesome. Without those spreads, I could not eat this bread. But this bread, man, that was just like a white toast that you just like
compressed
and like no nutrition. Okay. I think it was just like fucking, I don't know.
That's funny.
Oh, super man. Funny.
Yeah. Just wanted to like go a little bit through like what happens, because I know there is like two countries more after this.
Yeah.
What happens there? Like when did you decide to leave? How much time did you stay in Netherlands and then move to the next country, which is Denmark, as far as I remember?
Exactly, that was Denmark. Oh man, let's take 3 steps back, because once when I was in the canteen of the university where I started in Germany, in Koblenz, there was like the students magazine somewhere, and I read something about this master studies called creative business processes.
Yep.
I was like, okay, this sounds super interesting. I want to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And I decided back then already that I'm going to go to Denmark and do those studies.
Okay.
And I applied while I was working in the Netherlands. And I just thought I'm not going to get in there because they appeared to make it super hard to get in. But apparently it wasn't that hard at the end of the day, right? I think it's always this elitism going on with universities. And eventually I got in, so I quit my contract. And then I just moved to Denmark.
To study.
Yeah.
So to go back to study, your decision was to quit a job.
Yeah.
And move to another country that it's not your home.
Exactly, again. Because of those studies. It wasn't because it is Denmark or whatever. I mean, it's not that I did not know anything about Denmark. I think everybody heard those studies that they're apparently the happiest people in the world and whatsoever. And I mean, it doesn't matter at the end of the day. I just did it for the subject. And if I could have studied the subject somewhere else, I would have done it somewhere else.
Okay.
But it just didn't work. In Amsterdam, they had something similar. They didn't take me because even though I finished my bachelor's in Germany, you have this thing called Fachabi, which is not a full college entrance degree. It's weird to explain. Whatever, I didn't meet the requirements of them. And that's why, otherwise I would have stayed in Amsterdam.
Meaning it was for you the moment to change in terms of career, or why having a fixed contract you decide to study again?
I just felt like I'm not done yet.
Mm-hmm.
It was just this feeling of I don't know enough.
Okay.
You know, I mean, not that I did not like the job that I did back then, but I knew that this isn't like the destination where I want to stay, or I didn't feel like I have arrived yet, you know.
Makes sense.
Yeah, exactly. So, and since I read about those studies and about Copenhagen, and I was just like, yeah, I mean, come on, just do it as long as you can. And I mean, I didn't expect to get in. So I thought I'm just going to stay a year there, but then I had to leave after half a year. So
It
was just a short stay.
So you left Netherlands after half a year of being there?
Yeah, in total it was like around 8 months or something like this. Yeah, exactly.
Nice. And you went directly to Copenhagen.
Yeah, and remember me not having a flat?
So the story repeats again?
It repeats again, but this time it was the worst. Like, that was really the worst because... you want to check?
No, it's okay.
Okay. Because this time it really took me a long time to find something.
Okay.
So I was couch surfing, staying in hostels. One day I literally had no place to stay because the cheapest hostel where I used to be all the time in the first month did not have a bed left. And yeah, like the only option I had was basically going to a bar and stay till the reception was open again and basically go into the same fucking bed that had all the nights before. It was like a crazy place, dude. There were like, I think, 12 bunk beds in the same room. And the only way to fucking close them was like a little curtain thingy. There was one guy, I haven't heard such a loud snorer in my life, man. Like, and my superpower is I can sleep wherever I want to, as fast as I want to. Mm. I'm really proud of that. But this guy, he beat me. He broke me, man. Okay. I couldn't sleep, man. And yeah, I did this for more than a month, couch surfing, mm-hmm. whatsoever. Study started already, you know. It was horrible. I was a fucking mess. I was considering actually just quitting the studies and coming back. It was that bad. Yeah. So I couldn't really enjoy the country and everything in the beginning. Like the first impressions, they were mainly bad because I just thought like nobody's willing to help.
It's maybe, super hard. Maybe this is Tali saying that they are the happiest people in the world. Maybe they are.
I don't know, man.
Maybe they are happy, but they don't help me.
I don't get it, man. I don't get it. So, yeah, but I mean, obviously, I made some good impressions. I got good impressions. I hope I made some good impressions, too. But, yeah, that was a rough start. It was a really rough start. Yeah. But then, after all, I got to say, culture-wise, if you like, so many people say Germans are so cold.
Mm.
I would say you have.
I think that's quite a stereotype. At the end, after 3 years living here, there is some cold people. Yeah, mm-hmm. it's true. But I think I know people from other countries which is much colder than German, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah.
Yeah, Danes for sure. One of my English professors did a really, really nice quote once. I'm not quite sure if you know about this concept of coconuts and peaches.
No.
So it's a really hardcore simplification. So you have two types of cultures, basically.
Mm-hmm.
You have a coconut culture and a peach culture. A peach would be, for example, Americans.
Mm-hmm.
Easy to get through the shell, super warm and welcoming whatsoever. But if you want to have some deep talk, that's only happening in the inner circle.
Mm.
Then you have coconut countries like Denmark, where it is super hard to break through the shell. Having like small talk with them, like there is nothing
inside. No, no.
And they're just dead. Like, honestly, bus rides. Or train rides, nobody's talking to each other. Like nobody's greeting each other. Like nothing. Like
I would die there.
It's super weird. Like it's actually considered rude talking to someone in the fucking bus or train. At least that's what someone told me.
Okay.
Yeah.
Come to Spain or Italy, and
that will be quite the opposite, I guess.
Oh man. Yeah, definitely. the weird moment it's silence anywhere in public in.
Completely opposite in Denmark. Yeah, okay. It's so insane, man. And but yeah, once you get through the shell, then it's a soft inner piece, mm-hmm. sort of, you know, like it's, you can have really good deep talk with those guys. And I mean, of course, as I said, super simplified, and of course there's different people and whatsoever. And I mean, I could see some truth though.
Okay.
I could see some truth in this comparison, simplification, yeah.
Again, in any generalization, there is always a little bit of truth in it. Mm-hmm. It has some fundamentals to do this kind of stuff, no?
Exactly.
To tell anything about. I wanted to propose you one thing, actually, because I know that we are running a little bit out of time. And it would be leaving Denmark and France and maybe Japan, if we have time for a second episode, talking together.
That sounds perfect, yeah? Man.
And concluding today with Thailand plus Netherlands, I have a couple of questions that I wanted to ask you.
Of course, man.
Would be, having these two countries in consideration,
mm-hmm.
weirdest moment that you had? And when I mean weirdest, I mean something that you will never expect to happen back home, maybe.
I got accepted by a monkey clan.
What?
I'm telling you, I'm not bullshitting.
I'm one gin tonic too deep for this.
I'm telling you. Like, seriously, I had a piece of pineapple somewhere on one of those 1,000 beautiful beaches that they have in Southeast Asia, right? And, you know, normally you do say those monkeys, they will rob your stuff and whatsoever. But there was just one fucking monkey. One fucking monkey, no humans whatsoever. And I had this piece of pineapple in my hand. And this guy just came straight towards me and was like, okay, cool, a monkey's just approaching me. And he just stopped right in front of me. And I gave him that piece of pineapple. He ate it. And then he just fucking jumped on my shoulder and started to do the weird,
scratching thing.
Yeah, exactly. He just checked me and like sort of like saying thanks or whatever. And he was like, okay, fucking hell, there is a monkey on my shoulder. Went, well, I'm just going to flex and keep on walking, you know. Mm. Eventually, this guy just stayed there and there were like more monkeys over there somewhere, you know. I was like, okay, maybe that's his family, whatever. So I just went there to the rest of the monkeys and there were like baby monkeys, mama monkeys, old monkeys, everything monkey. And then another monkey saw that the guy was chilling on my shoulder and jumped on the other part of my shoulder and was doing like weird stuff with my glasses. And the guy that I gave the pineapple to was actually protecting me from the other guy and like shooshed him away.
So you definitely went for the correct monkey to give the pineapple to, you know?
Dude. And I just freaking spent like 2 hours with those monkeys there, you know? And I went back to the same spot. I think I stayed around that area for 4 days. Mm. I went back to the same spot every day. I've never seen those monkeys again. Like, I think nobody would believe me this story. You can evaluate yourself, but that was one of the greatest moments in my life.
That's nice, actually. It's just like, I suppose that didn't happen in Netherlands.
Plot twist.
And I was in the zoo in Netherlands.
Exactly.
And I entered the cage of the monkey.
Exactly. I was actually a zookeeper.
Second question that I would ask, I would really like to hear from you would be, which recommendation do you give to anyone who is willing to go abroad and discover the world or work outside?
Mm-hmm. Plan enough but not too much. Mm-hmm. Right, because planning too much will give you some weird expectations that will never be met.
Mm-hmm.
And planning too little will cause you to stay in shitty hostels for more than a month. So
maybe having a flat before going to a place, it's okay.
I think it's okay.
But still accept buying a motorbike for $100.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Nice references. Yeah, exactly. I think it's, otherwise you're just losing out on so many things if you're being too cautious. But on the other hand, yeah. I think the motto of this episode could be stupid and brave, right? Because there's this fine line.
Definitely would be.
If you meet this fine line, you're going to have a good time. I can tell
you. It would be stupid, brave, and some cuts. Just to be able to close the episode today, one last thing that I like to do with all my guests. Do you have any personal friends, anything that you would like to take the advantage of the podcast to promote, to go with?
Let me think.
Oh, come on, you're a fucking musician.
Yeah, that's the
go
problem.
Easy with that.
There's too many. I mean, there's one guy who recently, he's just freaking owning it, and that's my boy Tao. He's from Offenbach and he's a freestyle rapper, but also a really great musician. And I think this guy has so much talent and he should be recognized way more. And his name is Tao.
There will be links, descriptions and everything on the description of the episode in YouTube for sure.
Exactly.
So if you can pass me the information, we will definitely...
For sure, I'm going to send you a link of his last rap battle.
Yes. We will also put the name of Stefan. He is also a musician, so maybe you can check that. Here it comes, my promotion. Crazy guitarist.
Thanks, man.
So yeah, man, thank you so much for being here today. It's already agreed that we will have a second episode together.
Yeah? That sounds good, man.
You live in too many places to do it in 1 hour. So
no worries.
We will do the second episode for Denmark and France, and maybe if we have time, a little bit of Japan. It has been a pleasure to be here with you.
Cheers, man. Salute.